I truly believe that work as a medium is the purest way and perhaps the only way to think about actually discovering health.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. We tell the stories of people who are defining the future of work. Our guests walk the tightrope, away from meaningless toil, and towards work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. This week, we meet Denise Bruder. She is the founder of Sway Workplace, a professional community and career platform that enables overworked people to transition to and succeed in a flexible workplace. To that end, Denise is helping lead people to the meaningful work of their dreams. In this episode, you will discover the why moment that led Denise along a journey to help others get more enjoyment and fulfillment out of work. She also describes how work today, which 66% of us find somewhat to very meaningless, can be reimagined to make us healthy. We spoke with Denise Bruder earlier this week on Zoom. Denise Bruder, welcome to the Tightrope.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well today. It's a little hot outside already, but, you know, we'll soldier through. We'll do this.
We will. And I, you know, we have an older house that has one zone air conditioning, so we're all hugging the same zone.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's get to it. You are the founder of Sway Workplace. What is that and what is your mission?
So Sway Workplace is a community of people that are mastering flexible work. And what our intent is at Sway is to bring together people and professionals that are intent on working smarter and not harder. And together we see the collective tool as being that of flexibility. Because if you can adopt a flexible mindset and a way of working, we think that is the ultimate way of finding balance in life, which allows you to find meaning in work, which is also another way of future-proofing your career.
So how do you do that? How do you get people to thrive doing the work that they do and want to enjoy doing?
I think the big way that we do it is, you know, if you were to boil down our product platform, it is a learning and development solution. So that's something that's very recognizable. And within our learning development solution, we offer a lot of skills training and techniques. So you can learn something and you can learn a technique to develop something. And then you have our community, which is a space to grow. And that to me is the ultimate form of progress. But the greatest thing that we actually look at and thrive on is the idea of helping people see that there's another way of being, that there's another way of looking at yourself and how you approach work. And it is the idea of helping people break the feeling of inertia. So this is always the way we've worked. This is always the way we've done it. It's always the way I've thought, to seeing the light that you do have options and how you see yourself and how you approach work and how you evolve. So a lot of that is the flexible mindset, which we think leads to a sense of agility. And once you have agility, you have the ultimate tool to finding purpose and balance.
So I got to get to the why question. How did you get to Sway Workplace? And I guess by extension, what is your origin story into discovering this path that I am taking too towards helping people get to meaningful work?
You know, I think like a lot of times when you find something that is very purposeful for you, it oftentimes feels like a bit of a lifelong mission. I would say that for me, so I grew up in a small town in the west of Ireland. And Irish people and Ireland as a culture have had a very long history of immigration over centuries. And it always centered around work or the absence of work. And then when you had work, the value in work. So for me, the idea of work always played a significant theme in everything that I did just by the people that I was around. And like most people, I had an opportunity, a fortunate opportunity to go to university. I came to the US to work in finance, and after several years of working in corporate job, I had started a family, so very kind of traditional path for people. A couple of years ago, I had this kind of point in time where I was at a juncture in life and I had young children to take care of and I wanted to be in their life. And I had an opportunity for this great job that I knew would kind of help my career along. But to take that job, I had to be in the city and I live about an hour and a half away.
Oh boy.
And I had to make a decision between what goes and what gives. And I had this point in time where I was like, why do I have to make a decision to forego or sacrifice some part of my life when I know I can do a great job here in this new role and I want to be partake in my family? And at the same time, I observe my husband who loves his job, but he spends up to 3 hours a day commuting back and forth in the train. It's not the job that exhausts him. It's the actual commute that really drains his energy. And the real reflection on those two points, I'm like, there's got to be a better way. I'm like, Elon Musk's Tesla is floating in space as we speak, mm-hmm. and we can't seem to collectively move forward in the world of work to a more modern way of thinking about things. So it was that point in time that I was like, what else is there? There must be a better way. At the exact same time, I started studying the future of work, which is a term that people have become a little more aware of. And when I started looking at the idea of how technologies are influencing how we work, how we consume, how we are, I understood that there was a massive opportunity for change in modernizing work. So in solving my own pain point, I came up with the idea of Sway to create a platform, which kind of at its core is a future of work readiness platform for the everyday person so that we can modernize work, step into it, and ultimately humanize it by simply taking a little step to the left or a little step to the right and incorporating flexibility as a way of life.
Step to the right, step to the left is swaying.
That's what we call the company Sway, because we don't think this is monumental change. We think that it just little shimmy to the left, shimmy to the right could unlock a huge amount of human potential in our workforce.
Well, I think you just got onto something because you and I have both been in situations where the work had some meaninglessness aspect to it. And the idea of changing it is just so overwhelming. If we had known then what you and I know now, that just a little nudge left or right or back or forth could get us to a better place, we'd probably feel better about changing our circumstances. I think a lot of people, for whatever reason, aren't able to imagine that little amount of movement can make great strides of progress in your life.
Well, you know, I think that most people that are in the world of work, they see the light at the end of the tunnel and they know that there's more there. And I think there's a huge disconnect between people's subconscious and their conscious, which is this idea that I feel like I'm stuck. I know there's more here. I just can't see it because consciously I'm in a box and box is the traditional model. And, you know, so we have a model of work today that is literally 100 years old and stemmed from the factory system. And 100 years ago, we were a manufacturing economy that suited the nation wonderfully because we developed common standard of living, the American dream, our ideals and our values all grew from the idea of work in a box. But 100 years later, we've evolved to be a knowledge economy, very, 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 very different. So we're expecting people to be creative and be collaborative and be team orientated. But we're making them work in a box. And there's this big, huge disconnect, particularly as people's lives have gotten busier and busier and busier. So I think that people intuitively know that a change is due and have such a desire to make that happen. But I don't think people have the confidence to know that they can actually make a change, that they actually own their career and they own the decisions that they make because they're so used to being put in the box.
Well, that idea that you mentioned about the workforce and, you know, when we talked about that in pre-interview and I go, yes, she gets it. Henry Ford is probably the object lesson of creating that idea of a job where you transact, you work really hard and you get paid. And alongside of that, and also alongside of the fact that a lot of people suffered in work, we ended up building a union movement in this country. And with that came workforce protection, but it also provided what they call the safety net so that, you know, you worked hard, you weren't going to fall into despair, economic despair, and lose your house or lose your car or something. But we're at a point right now where all those workforce safety nets are falling apart, they're unraveling. So how does making the work that we do more meaningful get affected by the fact that some of the institutional structures that we put in place with the union movement and with government and other stakeholders, that those things are not as enduring as they used to be?
So I honestly think that I've always been fascinated by the past and history. Like, I honestly, if I had a wish, I'd put myself in a time capsule and go back like 100 years and just experience what life was like. I've always been fascinated with history. And I think I've come to the realization of why. And I think that is because to understand where we are today, you must understand or have a view on the past. The greatest thing we can do is look back. And in the 1930s, in response to the economic difficulties, Roosevelt hired on Frances Perkins as labor secretary. And she said to him, I can come on board, but if I do, I'm going to change things. We're going to innovate. So 100 years ago, the government and the working bodies and companies came together. We actually created the social safety net. We created a 40-hour work week. We created unemployment insurance and all these other benefits that are tied to traditional work. We made that up. Like, we designed that and put that in play because we were coming out of such disorganized labor movement. So to solidify and create structure around labor, we designed, those were innovations that we put in place 100 years ago because it suited the economy at the time. So your point there is so interesting. Fast forward 100 years later, here we are today. And I think we see that social safety nets, the structure of work, which played a significant and magnificent part in the economic foundation of this country, is due another level of just significant innovation. So where does that put us, right? Now we know that we've done it before and we can do it again, which is wonderful. The idea is, how do we come together and collaborate on this? And my personal view is the future of work is no longer a top-down mechanism. So we used to be very hierarchical. You know, it started at the top and it trickled down. I think that real, true, meaningful change and innovation is going to come from the bottom up in a community type setting. So I think people's collective voice is going to be the source of change as we step into the future, because I think our subconscious is going to connect to our conscious and we're going to see that there's a path forward.
Well, amen to that, because that's really where I'm at. You had mentioned, you know, the things that happened that created the workforce of the 20th century. And I think I mentioned to you that my grandfather emigrated to this country from Ukraine in 1913 with lint in his pockets. He was a very, very hard worker. He had a push cart and he moved to New Haven, Connecticut, and then he opened a dry goods store. Well, the point of this all is that he just was focused. He worked really hard, and then he met my grandmother and she worked really hard. And 25 years from his arrival, so in 1938, this guy who arrived basically penniless in the United States, 25 years later, was a successful business owner during the Depression, built a custom house for my grandmother and him and my dad and my aunt to live in. And then he sent my aunt to Wellesley, an exclusive college. This was the American dream.
Literally.
It was this upward mobility, and he was like a rocket ship. I mean, I'm just astounded that in 25 years, he went from nothing to lavish circumstances. The American dream now is not that. And I think the things that you are working to address deal with a much different set of circumstances. People end up or start in the workforce already encumbered with debt, usually student loans, maybe revolving credit loans, credit cards. As the Pew Research Group had indicated, the American dream is no longer about upward mobility as much as it is about economic stability. Do I have the financial means to weather some big event, some big tremor? My spouse gets hurt and my health insurance isn't enough to cover it. Now my spouse is out of work. How am I going to cover my monthly cash flow needs? I have a flood in the basement, some trigger. You know, most Americans don't have the means to withstand one tremor in their lives. And I think the American dream now is about economic stability, but it's also about much more. What do you think it is now about, Denise?
You know, I'd ask that in two ways. I think that, you know, the idea of the American dream, it's such an attractive, I mean, I myself, I'm also a product of the American dream, having moved from Ireland to the US and been able to achieve things based on the back of hard work, because that's what the American dream was. You know, it was the currency of economics.
Right.
It was the currency of being able to have opportunity to put in hard work and receive value so you could feed your family and create a source of stability. And that version of the American dream worked for so long, and it created America as such a prosperous nation because there was a lot of equality involved, meaning we were all dealing with the same variables to work with. Nobody was more, nobody was less. We were all dealt the same cards, and you made of it what you made of it. There's a lot of equality involved. And that's how we were able as a nation to extend prosperity and rise most of the nation. But today's interesting. I honestly think that there is a huge, I think that our culture of consumerism plays a significant role in where we are today. Mm-hmm. It is the idea that the value that I have internally and the value I feel, which oftentimes has come from work. Because if we step back, work isn't simply a paycheck. It's a source of identity.
Right.
It's a source of pride, my self-expression, legacy to my children and provisions. It's huge. The value of work is so significant to the being of the person, way beyond a paycheck. I think that we've crossed lines culturally in this consumerism culture that we live in. We think that if we consume, 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 that it fills a void or it provides a sense of value. And I think that we just through nature, we tend to put ourselves in difficult financial positions, which makes it, because nothing's changed, right? If work is still the currency of economic value, why are we so much harder off today? And why are we on the precipice of, could be nest default or like you're saying, could be personal, you know, mass financial implosion. If one thing goes wrong in your life, like how do we get there? Mm-hmm. I think we got there through this consumerism culture that has allowed us to cross wires of what's really of value in your day-to-day life. And that's really hard because it's saturation in media everywhere you turn. Mm-hmm. You know, there's pretty faces, pretty bodies doing pretty things. And social media has not been a help. It's been a hindrance in that way. So I think maybe it's a departure from the basic value system that we've had that has led us to put ourselves in these positions, not out of ill intent or bad will, but just maybe out of the course of a trend.
So what you've described is very unhealthful. The very thing that made the American dream what it was upward mobility, but also upward reward, a second car, vacations. And then my age cohort, just buying stuff all the time, stuff we didn't need. So now we're at a point where, again, as Pew mentions, 2/3 of us are to some degree disengaged or unhappy doing something meaningless at work. So the question we pose in this episode is a provocative one as a result. And we ask, can work make you healthy? So my question to you is, how can we make work healthy?
Well, I love provocative questions. That brings out some great conversation and ideas. And I thought about this question a lot over the last couple of days. And my true belief, and I guess the reason why I've got a drive for Sway and the things that we work on, is that I truly believe that work as a medium is the purest way and perhaps the only way to think about actually discovering health. That's how significant I think it is.
Okay, that just knocked me off my pegs. That's profound.
I'll buckle up. I'm going to explain why. So my theory on life is that there's four parts to the being. You have your mental, your emotional, your physical, and your spiritual, and they're quadrants. And together they come together to make the person. And work as a medium, because it's what we do, right? Work doesn't necessarily mean you may not get paid for work. It could be homework, it could be housework, it could be a hobby. You're working at a hobby. Predominantly by volume, we spend a lot of time in work that we get paid for. So it's all work. It's what we do. What I was struck by, even take the physical as an example, we just did a big piece of market research for Sway and I'm trying to uncover the real problem that people have. And does our solution to Sway solve that problem? And one of the things that we uncovered is that people are so entrenched in their perspective on work and how they approach that they will absolutely, the first thing they're going to forego to spend an extra couple of hours in the office or on a commute is going to be working out. Now that might seem kind of quite trivial, like maybe it's a yoga class or a run, but over time, that's a trend. And that's a trend towards physical health. People are foregoing their physical health. So we're knocking out one quadrant here because my perspective is I must spend more time on FaceTime at the office or putting out the most immediate fires or low value tasks because that's what's super important. I'm going to forego the working out component. When the reality is that your physical health is a source of energy and it's a source, it connects. The quadrants all connect. And if one's out of balance, they're all out of balance. So what if you were to work flexibly and integrate some kind of a workout routine, maybe it's a run once a week or a couple times a week, you will earn the energy back tenfold over that will make you way more productive in the work and the value that you do put in. That's the difference between energy and time. We often think about I can be in the office 12 hours a day, but what if you work for 8 hours a day and you were much more productive and successful? But that's your perspective on work, right? And that's ultimately in that one quadrant, how it absolutely fundamentally affects everything that you do just by prioritizing the physical aspect of working out and how does it relate to your energy levels and how you approach everything. That's one side of it. And the other side is the emotional side. The other quadrant is your emotions. How do you feel about things? How do you fit in your life and how do you see things? And again, you go back to work, 3 hours on a commute, that could be 3 hours you could spend with your family members or doing a hobby or something that adds value to you outside of your 9-to-5 job. And again, that's a source of energy, which is a source of balance, which is meaning. And then what does that do? It comes back to you and it electrifies you and allows you to be way more productive in your work life. Spirituality is the same thing that looks different for every person. And mentally, it's the same thing. What you could be stressed and burnt out at work, or you could approach it in a balanced way. So to wrap that up, what I would describe this as, and the way we talk about it at Sway, is that there's three things in the equation of work. There's the worker, that's you and I. It's the work being done, and it's the workplace where the work happens. The workplace and the work being done, they're inanimate. They don't live and they don't breathe. They don't make decisions. They're things that we choose to move around to create value. So the only thing that you have there is the worker. I'm a person, I'm a being, I'm a body. And the way I interact with work and the work being done, the workplace, is through my perspective. So to sum that up, in my crazy way that I look at this, your perspective, you own it. It's your filter of how you approach work. And that's totally under your purview because it's your personal filter. And if you look at that filter and see what's in there and take control and responsibility for it, you can absolutely think about how you approach work in a way that brings you health in many, many ways. So for me, for those reasons, it's the purest medium and form for achieving health in life. So it absolutely can make you healthier.
I want to go back to something that you said earlier, because we talked about how we kind of mechanized work. And one of the aspects of the workforce that we created in the United States in the early 20th century was the idea of it used to be the 60-hour week, and then it became the 50, and then the 40-hour work week. And the 40-hour work week was sort of the standard. You had to put in the time. A lot of people got paid hourly, but then that same paradigm, not paradigm, but that same model affected people who were non-exempt, who earned salaries. As a result, people like me in the advertising business when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, was to work more. 50-hour weeks, 60-hour weeks. Some weeks I put in 80 because I felt like that's what my worth was about, was squeezing out as much energy and as much creative benefit as I possibly could. Well, guess what? It made me sick. It made me physically ill. I lived at the chiropractor's office for about a 4-year period because where did that stress go? It went to the lowest part of my body, my sacroiliac joint. And when that flared up, I couldn't walk. I think you're onto something here. And I think one aspect of the empowerment that's going to happen is we're going to blow up this 40-hour work week so that we get rewarded for the output of our work and not the hours behind the output of our work. What do you think of that?
I think that you really hit on something very important there, which is the idea that your body, it's your greatest signaling system. You know, it is literally your greatest signal. Like, are you sleeping well? Are you eating well? Are you resting? You know, do you have any ailments? Your body is, I think we tend not to think about it, or we tend to discard it as this, that, and the other. But paying attention to your body in the way that you just described, it is the number one source for information and data on how you're doing in life, is to pay attention to your body. That's how significant. That goes back to the quadrants, the physical side, and why we must put in, you'll get out what you put in. That's why it's so significant. But between the 40-hour work week, I got to tell you something. When we say bust up the 40-hour work week, I think you could have somebody working 60 hours a week that is far more happier and balanced and has found meaning versus someone that's doing 40 hours a week. Meaning, I don't think it's the number of hours that you put in that's the qualifier or the variable to look at. It is, for us, I think it's about the principle of choice. Meaning, reflecting back on our idea, the research that we just did, there was nobody that we spoke to at Sway that said, man, that 40-hour work week, if I could trade it for 20, it would solve all my problems. Or I don't want to work for 40 hours, I want to work 18. Not one person said that to us. What we heard from the research that we did is that people are like, they love their jobs, they love what they're doing, but they're suffering from it. They're absolutely overworked because they're working in a box and they don't have choice. The majority of people are like, man, if I could get up in the morning, get a couple of hours in early, maybe take my kids to school, get back into work, maybe take a break in the afternoon and then jump back on at night, that would be ideal for me. So no one's saying they want to work less. I think people just want to work on their terms,
right,
or have some semblance of choice, because that's, if we're going to unlock human potential, that's what we have to be able to do. That's what we mean by flexibility. Where is that lever for each individual person? So people are hard workers. They want in, they want to put skin in the game. They want to get something out. They want to work. They find the value in it, but working in a box no longer fits because it's not the human experience. And that's what we're trying to evolve towards.
My good friends, Mike Hayes and Morley Winograd, who write a lot about millennials in the United States, but in politics and in the work world, have said that millennials are leading the way so that work becomes something you do during the day. It's not the day. And I love that because I'm a late baby boomer. And this idea was you pretty much are chained to your work from the time you arrived to the time you left. What happens if your kid who you adore is playing soccer and you want to be present in your child's life and you can't because you're in a meeting at a certain point? Mm-hmm. I think the idea of empowering people, as you said, from the bottom up to manage how they get their work done in a way that still allows them to balance out all the other parts so that mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically, everything's in tune. And if you do that, you got somebody who's going to be loyal to you, who's going to increase your lifetime investment of your hire of that person, as opposed to knowing that if you don't do anything, they're going to grow resentful and start looking for a new job in 18 months.
That is 100% the case. So that is what we consider the evolvement of the mindset towards, you know, we want to humanize work. I think we all want to we all want to be human at work. Because, you know, one of our big things at Sway is, like, you know, you're one person living one life. You know, you can put on a suit and you can only show up as part of you at work, but you're never going to be one person at work and one person at home or anywhere else. You're only one person. Right. One person, one life, make it count. And to us, we want to humanize the way people approach work so that we can all feel like that. Because feeling like that is internally when you feel like you're firing on all cylinders. So that for us is kind of the ultimate objective. I will tell you some other interesting things, my research that lends to this conversation, this point in the conversation, is that to evolve, even though we all know we want to get there, and it's not just a moral issue or a societal issue to, like, ease family problems and have people more present in their lives. I mean, the economy is calling for it. Like the C-suite of the economy are calling for people to have future work skills, which is, you know, that's why the Amazons of the world and Walmarts of the world are putting aside like almost $1 billion to retrain their people because they think they're going to be outdated in 3 to 5 years in relation to technologies influencing people. The C-suites and management are asking people to become more agile and flexible and upskill. But the reality is, it's all on paper and it's all talk the talk, but we have to actually make the change. And there's two changes that have to be made. There's the change on the company side and there's a change on the worker side. I'll give you a good example of both, which is currently a barrier to the evolution of work. On the company side is the fact that companies will talk a big, big talk and a big, big game because in PR perspective, it's amazing, right? It looks good. They're hitting all their social goals. They're attracting millennials. Their social media likes are up. But behind closed doors, companies are putting out the fires that get them to their next quarterly earnings revenue target.
Right, right.
That's where we are. Now, we as a country made the decision in the 70s when we opened up the idea of financialization, where the government were in bad economic way. They got the banks to come in to ease up the finances and prosperity grew, as did income inequality, which could be a whole nother show. But the reality is that companies, good people, they're filled with good people, just like you and I, right? They're all good people, good intentions. They're beholden to the quarterly earnings number, which is a couple of guys in pinstripe suits sitting in a room that set a number each quarter, and then companies rush to meet it at the expense of advancing social goals, like what we're talking about here. So where does that disconnect happen between what a company says they want to do and what do they truly want to do to allow people to find meaning and purpose in work? So part of what we do at Sway is think about how do we help companies bridge that gap. But then on the other side, the worker side, we know what we want, but we're afraid of it. We're afraid because people are influenced by the way they grew up. So one of the things we talk about today is we want to help people work smarter, not harder. That was a very interesting.
Okay, but what you just said, that fear comes out of working harder, not smarter.
That's it. Because we have in our minds the evolution of the last several generations, just like with your grandfather that came over. Mm-hmm. He worked hard. He hustled and he worked hard and he built personal success for himself. And in our psyche, maybe not as much the millennial generation, but all the later generations, if you're not working hard, are you working at all? Right? And that is just an outdated notion.
Denise Bruder, this has been fun, and we are going to have you back. You are like my sister from another mother. We have so much symbiosis in our thought leadership. It's going to be a pleasure to work with you and get you back on and talk about other aspects of creating a future of work around meaningful work. Thank you so much for being on The Tightrope.
Dan, thank you so much, and I'll see you again soon.
Links to Sway Workplace's social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who walk the tightrope to seek and do meaningful work. You can subscribe to us where you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. Together, let's walk the tightrope to find and do meaningful work. For the future of work is meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week. Stay healthy and socially distant, everyone.